The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Hello again, everybody. It's time for another edition of Need to Know here on Tony Curry Radio. We are delighted to be with you. Hope your week is off to a great start. We're looking forward to going over a few subjects that maybe you wouldn't expect on the program. I'm Kip Kiefer. One of the reasons for that is that my illustrious co-host, the brilliant Terry Quillian, and a major contributor to the subjects we talk about every week, is not available today. So I'm flying solo here, but it does kind of give me an opportunity to go down a list of some things that have been on my mind, and maybe it'll provoke some thoughts from you and even give you a little bit of something in some areas that perhaps will surprise you. And I feel like it would be good from the standpoint of you need to know. So let's get started here on this broadcast with the first subject on my mind. And it was one that unfortunately I just had to add in the last day or so, because we lost an absolute giant in every sense in the passing of Bill Russell. And a lot of people might not really grasp the enormity of that statement or the enormity of the man, literally and figuratively. Bill Russell, of course, a 6'10" former basketball player for the Boston Celtics. This person defined, I think, and really is the definition of success in terms of team sport championships. Bill Russell just completely revolutionized the game, and in his later life also lent himself personally to just about every just cause you can think of, although he was a highly private person. But let's just put in perspective, because I think he's underappreciated from the standpoint of what he accomplished in basketball. You've, of course, in the modern day, it's Michael Jordan, LeBron James, who's the greatest player of all time. Well, let me interject that I think, as great as both of those guys were and are, Bill Russell deserves that designation based on just what he accomplished as an individual and teams he was on. He was just a tall, 6'10", skinny kid coming out of high school and not recruited by anyone. His primary success athletically was in high jumping. Imagine a 6'10" high jumper who could just absolutely get up and over the bar. And he went head first long before that was the style that was employed. The old style of high jumping, of course, was getting a running start and throwing your leg over the bar and then just kind of contorting yourself to get over without knocking it down. Bill Russell basically went right over the top, and that was unprecedented for his time in the mid-50s when he was doing high school track. He was not heavily recruited at all for basketball, despite his attributes. He was considered to be too thin, too skinny, just a reed of an individual. So he only got one major college scholarship, and it wasn't even that major because it was from the University of San Francisco, which a lot of people may not even know exists, the Dons of San Francisco. And all Bill Russell did there was reward that good decision by the university by delivering back-to-back NCAA basketball titles in the mid-50s. And it wasn't Kentucky. It wasn't North Carolina. It wasn't Kansas. It was the University of San Francisco who won those two back-to-back championships. So then he became eligible for the NBA draft due to some unbelievably innovative and clever maneuvering. Red Auerbach, who was coach and general manager of the Boston Celtics, managed, despite having a higher draft pick, to wheel and deal and get Bill Russell onto the Celtics. And you talk about a good move there. All Bill Russell did was play 13 seasons in Boston and win. Are you ready for this? In 13 seasons, 11 NBA championships. 11 out of 13 seasons, they won it all, including 8 years in a row between 1959 and 1966. And one of the reasons I think Bill Russell doesn't get the credit, obviously that resume just blows away anybody in major professional sports, winning 11 titles in your career. And I think one of the reasons he gets, you know, kind of put back on the shelf a little bit is because he was never a tremendous scorer. The greatest season he ever had, he averaged 19 points, which is outstanding. But when you look at Michael Jordan and LeBron James, up around 30 to 35 points, that's not even close to their totals. But what Russell did to revolutionize the game was completely change thoughts about defense. And this is a guy who worked and just was a tremendous force on defense, blocking shots, using his height and tremendous jumping ability to alter shots, led the league in rebounding just about every year he played, which was unprecedented for a single player to just dominate the glass. And again, his record speaks for itself with 11 championships in 13 years. And it's frequently forgotten, and I'm sure most people don't know, that when Red Auerbach retired in 1966, Bill Russell in 1967 became the head coach of the Boston Celtics. Now, he was still the starting center, still a player, but Bill Russell became the player coach of the Celtics, and in his 4 years at the helm, won three more championships. So, unbelievably extraordinary, history-making. He was the first Black coach in major professional sports in history, and he followed that up with winning three more championships as the player coach for the Celtics. Later in life, he was always a private person. He was not very comfortable in public or around people that he really didn't know, but he really opened up later in his life and had a couple of tremendous interviews. There's a guy named David Faraday, and if you're not familiar with him, he was a professional golfer. He still does golf commentary on TV. He was from Ireland. But this guy is a tremendous personality and does these amazing interviews with select few athletes. I don't think he's currently – he did a series for a couple of years, but it's on YouTube, all the different profiles he did. And the one with Bill Russell was just magical. It was so interesting to hear Russell open up about his career and things he liked and the remembered and just the personality. This was a man of unbelievable integrity and grace and extreme intelligence. We have lost a major, major figure, not only an icon in basketball, but an American icon with the passing of Bill Russell. We're going to stay in the sports arena for another quick thought. Well, I don't know how quick it'll be. I'm not really known for being too concise, but let's talk about something that kind of gets on my nerves, because obviously I'm a huge sports fan and watch a lot of sports. And the other night I got kind of triggered by back-to-back occurrences. I was watching a game and there was a ground ball to the left side that the batter hustled down the line and actually beat the play at first base. And the announcer immediately declares, "What great hustle by so-and-so." I don't even remember what the game was on the MLB network. And every time, and you hear that at least once or twice in every baseball broadcast, somebody runs a great distance and dives and makes a play. Somebody actually runs hard to first base on a ground ball, and they're praised for their hustle. This is a sport, folks, that the average, now listen to my words, the average salary in baseball right now of all 30 teams, of all 25, 26 guys on the active roster, the average salary, $4.3 million a year to play baseball. The minimum salary, if you get called up and you sit on the bench and don't ever get in the game, but just for suiting up, the minimum salary in baseball, $555,000. Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals was recently offered a 15-year contract that would have paid him $440 million. That's $30 million a year, roughly. He turned it down. And these guys, with commanding that kind of money and the opportunity to play professional baseball, are praised for hustling? Give me a break. They should be running through walls. They should be spiking their grandmother. They should be doing everything they can every second they're privileged to be on that field. Don't tell me a guy deserves credit for hustling, which brings to mind what happened next. A commercial came on for FanDuel. And if you're not familiar with that, it is a sports betting service that started out as kind of a fantasy league where you drafted players daily and based on their statistical performance, you can win money. Well, it's branched into a full-blown sports betting operation now. And FanDuel had a commercial talking about getting in on great action with baseball. And it concluded with FanDuel, the official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. And coming off the hustle comment and the official partner of sports betting for baseball, of course, my mind immediately went to the man who has hustle in his nickname, Peter Edward Rose. Pete Rose, who played back, of course, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and I think he even retired in the 90s, so his longevity was amazing. But Pete Rose epitomized what it was to hustle. In fact, it's a funny story how Pete Rose became Charlie Hustle. In spring training for the Cincinnati Reds in the early 60s, he was playing an exhibition game against the vaunted New York Yankees, and future Hall of Famer Whitey Ford was on the mound. Ford walked Pete Rose, and Pete dropped his bat. He was unknown at the time, and sprinted full speed to first base, which, of course, became a moniker of his career from then on. And Whitey Ford looked at him with just absolute bemusement and sort of disgust, and later remarked to teammates and reporters, "Who in the hell was that guy? What's his name, Charlie Hustle?" It was a derisive comment. He was questioning everything that all Rose's antics, but didn't realize at the time it wasn't a show. This is a guy that just completely embraced the opportunity to play the game. He wasn't the most talented, the fastest. He was just a guy who got the opportunity to do what he wanted to do and loved and made the most of it. So that's where that Charlie Hustle nickname comes from. I'll give you a personal story. In the 70s, during the time the Reds were an absolute force in baseball, winning World Series, and they were called the Big Red Machine. They had a tremendous team. I was at a doubleheader on a Friday night in early September, and it was actually a little chilly at old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, the house that Hank Aaron built, where he hit number 715 and passed Babe Ruth's record. I was actually there that April 8th night as well as a very young guy. But this doubleheader, and yes, folks, they actually used to play back-to-back games. They still do now if they have to in rainouts. But to get the maximum on the revenue, they play a game early in the day, then take a long break and play again at night. Back in the day, they were called twi-night doubleheaders. They started at 5:30 with the first game, played the game, took a 20-minute break, and came out and played a second game. So you talk about a great value. We'd go down there and hustle up tickets, and the, gosh, probably paid the princely sub of $5 or $6 to get in and got to watch baseball for the next 5 or 6 hours with two games back to back. Well, the Reds were great. The Braves were terrible. The Reds beat the Braves in the first game. I think it was 14-3. I mean, it was an absolute blowout, but the Reds batted so much and scored so much that it pushed the second game into a real late corridor. And lo and behold, in the second game, the Braves actually had the lead going to the ninth inning by a single run. There was two outs already in the inning when Pete Rose came up. And, you know, the Reds had a huge lead in their division. The game meant absolutely nothing. It was cold. It was September. It was 11:30 at night. And Pete Rose hit a chopper down the third baseline. And it looked like that was going to be the end of the game. I remember as a fan, and I'll never forget this, looking up and realizing as the throw was being made, Rose was digging down the line with all his might. I mean, absolutely flying. And he was, again, not a gifted fast runner, but Rose actually legged out that chopper to third and was safe at first base. And I turned to whoever I was with and said, "That was unbelievable. It's something I never forgot." Of course, what ended up happening was even more remarkable, as Joe Morgan, the Hall of Famer, was up next and hit a ground ball toward the middle of the second baseman with the Braves, made a great diving stop. But Rose already was almost to second, and he tried to throw Morgan out at first, and Morgan was very fast as well. Rose hit the bag at second. When he realized the throw was going to first, he just kept going. And on a ground ball that was knocked down and actually fielded by the Braves infield, Rose went from first to third again just because he was playing his butt off. Tony Perez ended up doubling in both those guys. The Reds won a meaningless game because of Pete Rose, where anybody else basically would have probably jogged to first, and that would have been it. But that really made an impression on a young man's mind. And I think back in that era, I mean, Pete was always controversial because of the way he played, but he was revered by so many people because of the way he played the game. So what ultimately happened to him became just an American tragedy. And hearing the fact that FanDuel is the official sports betting partner, Pete Rose is banished from baseball for betting on games, not betting against his team. He was the manager of the Reds at the time. And Pete, you know, missed the action of being a player and gravitated to gambling. Now, obviously, that was a terrible offense. And because of what happened in 1919 with the Chicago White Sox, who became known as the Chicago Black Sox because they intentionally lost the World Series, baseball had this obsession with not gambling on games. And so Pete Rose paid the price being banished for life. But the provision in that particular agreement was he would be considered for reinstatement within 1 year. He could apply for reinstatement, which if you were Pete Rose at the time, and Pete is not a very congenial character. He is combative. He approaches life like he did baseball. But the assumption would have been that, okay, I'll be reinstated eventually. Well, it's 33 years later, and because it's still such a political hot potato, he still has not been welcomed back into the graces of baseball, and it's a tragedy. He's 82 years old now. He had 4,256 hits, more than any player that ever played the game, and he is not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, 33 years. People are mass murderers are paroled before this time. This is a forgiving country. This is a guy who accomplished so much on the field. Come on, baseball. He's 82 years old. Give Pete Rose his opportunity to stand up at Cooperstown and take his rightful place among the game's greats. It's just a shame. And the hypocrisy of having an official sports betting partner is unbelievable to me while we're praising players for hustling. I ranted, as I predicted, a little longer on that because you can tell that's a subject near and dear to my heart. Just a couple other quick things I wanted to point out. It's obviously I watch way too much TV. But there's several different commercial messages, and not just a specific one, but categories of commercials that are kind of driving me crazy right now. Pharmaceutical ads. These big pharmaceutical companies have so much money that now they are doing these extensive advertising campaigns to tout their prescription drugs. Now, these are not drugs you can go to Walgreens and buy. They suggest at the end of these spots that you ask your doctor about this particular brand that they sell. And that really kind of defeats the whole purpose of going in and say, hey, doc, I'm really interested in so-and-so. I saw it on TV. I think it could really help me. So really the percentage of success they probably derive from that is questionable. But the fact that in a 60-second commercial, 45 seconds are disclaimers about all the terrible stuff that it can do to you. I saw one for eczema the other day, which is, I guess, a skin rash. And the disclaimer said this could cause blood clots, stroke, heart failure, you know, kidney malfunction, blah, 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 even debilitation and death. Okay, I'm just going to keep my eczema, thank you very much, and deal with my skin rash. If the medicine to clear up my skin might put me in a pine box. So the whole thing is just ridiculous. And the fact that they're spending that kind of money just tells you that they have way too much money that they could be actually using for productive causes for people that really need help instead of touting their newest ointment to be a miracle cure, despite the fact that it has 500 possible side effects. Another commercials that I see that's driving me nuts is the push for gold and silver, with currency just completely diminishing. And this didn't start just recently with inflation and the devaluation of currency. This has been going on for years and years, predicting that silver is going to boom because it's in short supply and it's needed for so many things. They keep saying that, and they keep saying that this is the best time. This is, you know, this is going to explode, but it's still really cheap. If that's the case, if they're telling the truth, why would they be so anxious to unload it on you if it's going to be so valuable? And B, when is this going to happen? And your currency, which they talk about being so vulnerable and it's going to be worth nothing, guess what they want for their gold and silver? Your currency. It sounds like the modern day version to me of the wagon rolling into town selling snake oil that's all cure. I'm sure there was a bunch of disclaimers with that too, like the above topic. Moving on. The dumbing down of America is scary to me. I saw and I went back and watched it again, a piece that I saw on YouTube a while back of an interviewer at the Mall of America in Minneapolis, talking to people walking by, and just to kind of test his theory on the fact that Americans really kind of live in a vacuum and don't know much about what's going on or nothing about American history. He was stopping people and saying to them, we've lost Franklin Delano Roosevelt, your thoughts. And the guy who really struck me was kind of wearing a sport coat. He had glasses. He looked like he might be an insurance salesman or an accountant. And he said, that's really sad news. I first just want to send out my sympathies to his family. He was a great man, and I know he did a lot of great things. I mean, it was just a blanket answer. If you'd told him that Joe Schmo, the guy working at the convenience store had tragically passed, he would have said the exact same thing. The funny thing was, I think this interview was conducted in 2018, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt died in April of 1945, 73 years before this guy. And he didn't fool him by saying he passed away today or we've lost Franklin Roosevelt today. He said, we've lost Franklin Roosevelt. Well, we lost him 73 years ago. He was still president during World War II. In fact, Hitler outlived him by about 3 weeks. They both died in April of 1945. So Roosevelt didn't even see the end of World War II. But the point is, if Franklin Roosevelt had just died that day in 2018, he would have been 133 years old. I think that would have been more remarkable news than his passing. So it's just another example of the fact that people really need to kind of wake up. Remember the book by George Orwell, 1984. George Orwell had slogans from the futuristic government: ignorance is strength. The person who controls the, let me get the quote right here. The people who control the past control the future, and the persons who control the present control the past. Misinformation, lack of information, dumbing down of the public is a perfect way to create this kind of groupthink sheep mentality. And everybody needs to step up and you know, embrace other things outside their immediate circle. 133 years old, died 73 years before, and this guy was giving his best to the Roosevelt family. I sound like I'm whining. I'm running out of time. So I want to finish on kind of a high note of something that fascinates me, and I hope it does you as well. There is an incredible story that I follow and check periodically on involving the 10th president of the United States. And if anybody could get that, I will send you a valuable prize without looking it up. But the 10th president was an individual by the name of John Tyler. John Tyler was president from 1841 to 1845. John Tyler took over when William Henry Harrison, the oldest president ever to be elected at the time, at the astonishing age of 68. Now we've got all of our contenders for the presidency in their at 80. So Harrison was considered ancient at 68. And unfortunately for him, that's kind of how it played out. He gave a 2.5 hour inauguration speech on the coldest day anybody could ever remember in Washington and contracted pneumonia and died after 30 days, making Tyler president. All that's secondary to the story. John Tyler was born in 1790. He lived through the Civil War period until about 1870, but in 1863, during the Civil War, long after his presidency, in his 70s, he actually fathered a child, two of them, as a matter of fact. And those guys, one of them lived up until into the next century, of course, up until about 1930. But in his 70s, he also fathered two sons. And incredibly, today, 2022, one of those sons, Harrison Tyler, is still alive in Virginia at 93 years old. One more in November, he'll be 94. So think about that. The 10th president of the United States, John Tyler, born in 1790, has a living grandson, 1700s, 1800s, 1900s. Now we're in the 20s, in the 2000s. That's four different decades. And his grandson, not great-grandson, not great-great-grandson, his son's son, his grandson, is still living. I find that to be absolutely fascinating, and I hope you do too. Okay, folks, it's time to wrap it up after that interesting rant and rave on many different subjects. Let's quickly review. Bill Russell was a great American and a tremendous loss. Pete Rose, put Charlie Hustle in the Hall of Fame, for God's sake. He epitomized what doing your best and making the most of your God-given ability is all about. And pharmaceutical companies, spend some money on some causes other than promoting yourselves and your brands and telling me all the terrible things it can do to me. Gold and silver, folks, I just don't buy it, literally or figuratively. And yes, folks, watch a documentary, read a book, enhance your knowledge. Being really ignorant of things is not the best way to go about life. Remember the line from Animal House,
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son. And not calling any of our listeners that, but all of us can benefit from being a little bit more informed and a little bit more, you know, filled with perspective to interpret events. So with that all being said, and all the best to Harrison Tyler, we're out of time. Thanks for everybody listening. Such an opportunity and a privilege to be on Tony Curry Radio. We will join you again next week for another Need to Know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.